The Toby Gribbin Show. Highlights.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Chesney Hawkes is a pop singer-songwriter whose career started at the age of 19 when he appeared in the film Buddy's Song, which featured his best-known single, The One and Only, which topped the UK singles chart for 5 weeks and reached the top 10 in the US. And he's on the line here just now. How are you today?
I'm very well, Toby. How are you doing?
Yep, I'm doing great. So, of course, the song The One and Only was featured in the film Buddy's Song. How did you actually get the role in that film?
Oh, I literally auditioned. It's funny. It's kind of a slightly convoluted story. I was having my wisdom teeth out and I woke up with gauze in my mouth and everything. And all I could see was a little TV in the corner of the room. And Roger Daltrey was on the TV appealing for a young boy that could possibly play his son. And I couldn't talk. And I remember my parents were there. And I was like, oh, I want to do that. And literally, you know, a week later, I was in the line of young boys that it was like a, you know, X Factor style audition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, loads and loads of young boys. And I was lucky enough to get the part. I mean, you know, it took a while. I went to about four or five different auditions that kept getting steadily and steadily more, serious. Yeah. And more people watching until it ended up at Bray Studios between me and another guy, and the Who were rehearsing at Bray Studios. Mm. where they were rehearsing for their comeback tour back then. They're yeah. still doing it now. Finale comeback tour, like. And that was interesting because I had to play guitar in front of Pete Townsend, so that was a very interesting one, and very nerve wracking. But I was obviously lucky enough to be right for the role, and you know, I got the part. That was it.
Did you have any acting experience before taking on that role?
No, none at all. I was always just a musician, and the reason that I was interested in it was because the part was very much geared towards music. The story. Story was a young boy that was a songwriter and played guitar, and it just said something to me, and I thought, oh, this is a chance for me to get into the music industry, and maybe there's a record deal at the end of it, which there was.
So. Did it ever cross your mind that maybe it would be a way to get into the acting industry?
Yes, it did, but I honestly didn't know how I was going to do with the acting. I didn't, because I'd never acted before in my life. I was only 17 when I got the part. So for me, it was an unknown quantity, you know. But I really, really enjoyed it. Actually, it was a real challenge, and I got kind of thrown into the lion's den, as it were. And there were some amazing actors involved. Michael Elphick, who played Boone, and everyone knows Michael. And then Sharon Deuce, who played my mum. You know, they had been acting since they were kids, and they took me under their wings. But I also had like a lot of younger people that were kind of had gone on to do great things, like Nick Moran, Lee Ross, Julia Sawala, Paul McKenzie, all these amazing young actors that at the time had done like Press Gang and Grange Hill and all these The Bill. Everyone had been in The Bill at some point.
Yeah. I guess you must have felt felt lucky to be in with the actors.
Yeah, very much so. And also a little bit nervous because they'd all been to, you know, drama school and all that kind of stuff. And that's something that I hadn't done. So I was a little bit kind of, it wasn't that I felt like a fraud.
Yeah.
I just felt that I felt a little bit from those guys. Like, who is this young whippersnapper who's come out of nowhere and got the lead part? You know what I mean? So there was a little bit of pressure from that.
Yeah. So in terms of The One and Only, when you first heard it, did you think, oh, that's going to be a hit? Or was it maybe just one of the songs out of many in the soundtrack and wasn't special at the time?
Well, it was actually the very last song that we recorded, the very last song that came along, because all the other songs, pretty much most of the other songs, were written specifically for the film. So the guy that wrote the book and the screenplay, he wrote all the lyrics to songs like I'm a Man, Not a Boy and Secrets of the Heart and all the songs that were actually included in the film, because they were very much, you know, part of the script. You know, the character wrote them about the story that was happening in the film, if you see what I mean. So so they were all very much kind of like inner circle songs. I wrote a few of the songs with Nigel, the writer. So The One and Only was like almost like an afterthought. The record label were like, we love the album. You know, we've got some singles here and we are very pleased and very happy with it. But maybe there's another couple of songs perhaps, or maybe one song, you know. So because it was with a major record label at the time, you know, there were loads of songs thrown at us.
Yeah.
And I tried to write some songs, everything. But then my dad knew Nick Kershaw's publisher.
Oh, no.
And he played him a couple of songs and he's like, oh my God, these are great. Is this a new Nick album? And, you know, because dad knew I was a massive Nick Kershaw fan. And he said, no, it is Nick, but he doesn't want to record these songs. He's kind of taken a sabbatical from pop stardom and wants to kind of write for other people. So when we brought the song, Dad brought the cassette back to me, and I remember I still got that cassette somewhere. I've got a little asterisk. There was about 15 songs. I got a little asterisk by The One and Only and a couple of other ones. And we brought it to the team and we rehearsed it. We were recording at Abbey Road at the time, and it didn't go down very well. You know, like the whole team were like, oh, you know, it's an outside song. And, you know, I'm sure we can find something internal, you know. And so that day I went away a little dejected because I thought, there goes my chance of meeting Nick Kershaw, you know. But then the record label kind of got in touch and said, oh, let's put the boys' vocal on it. And, well, the rest is history, so.
Yeah. And that's the song, of course, that you're mainly known for. Does that annoy you, that it kind of follows you around a bit?
I've had my ups and downs with the song. I cannot tell a lie. Not that I've ever disliked the song at all. The thing, it's not the song itself that gets on my nerves sometimes. It's the inability for people to think that there's more to me than the one song, if you see what I mean. So, and that's fair enough. I'm so used to it now, Toby, and I understand it. I really do. But it can be a little bit disheartening sometimes, you know, as a singer songwriter, an artist, to be kind of labelled with that that kind of you know, one hit wonder thing, and people know my name is synonymous with the phrase The One and Only. You know, it does get a little bit old sometimes. You know, I love the song. I still have a lot of love for it. And, you know, I've kind of given up ownership of it because now when I play it, I mean, I didn't play it for years after that time. I really didn't. I was kind of anti it. But these days, you know, we're good friends. I love playing it, and I understand that people have their own connections to it and their own love for it. So, it's a bit of both, if you know what I mean.
And when you perform that song now, is there a different connection to it than you maybe used to when you used to perform it back in the day?
Yeah, of course. I mean, back in the day, it was like my first single. I was very energetic, you know, I was taking my top off and stuff like that. And, it was always kind of, I always felt the lyric as kind of a self-empowerment lyric. So I think I always had that in my heart when I was singing it. But these days, as I said before, I've kind of given up ownership to it. So when I sing it, it's almost in a different way. I sing it for the people that kind of have that connection to it and love it, you know. And you can't help but feel the energy when you start up that kind of iconic intro, that, you know, then you see people, oh, it's The One and Only, and they kind of come to the front and, you know, get all excited about it. So yeah, it is different these days. But as I said, I still really enjoy playing it.
Yeah. And in a weird kind of way, you became famous in 1991. That was when The One and Only was a hit. But you're still as relevant today, really. It doesn't seem like your fame has gone away.
Well, I mean, that side of things is a mystery to me. I don't know why that is. I often sometimes attribute it to my name because it's quite a memorable name, I guess. and, you know, I never stopped recording and making music and touring. That was one of the things that I had so many great advices back then. Roger Daltrey, I toured with Brian Adams, I toured with Huey Lewis. I've got my dad who was in the Tremolos. And all of those kind of great musicians all told me to stay on the road, you know, never stop touring. So I've played in every single venue up and down the country in Europe. And, you know, I never stopped touring. And I think that probably has a lot to do with it. Because so many people have seen me live over the years as well, you know, so maybe that's it. Yeah. I don't know, Toby. It's an interesting mystery.
Yeah. Now, because you became famous so young at the age of 19, did you ever feel like you missed part of your youth and had to give up a lot for fame?
Yeah, I was very young. At that time, all of my friends were going to uni and doing all that side of life. But I kind of did the uni 10 years after that when I was playing all the universities, you know. And I would turn up at all and do all the kind of survivor balls and things like that, you know. So I did get to experience that side of life, but a little bit later on. Yeah, it is true. My life was not my own for those kind of, well, 4 years, I guess, from kind of 19 to 23, something like that. There were times when, you know, I was touring so much that I wasn't home for, you know, months and months on end. And, you know, I didn't really get to see my actual friends for a very long time. So, yeah, I definitely missed out on some of the kind of, I don't know, rites of passage of a young, you know, teenage, early 20s. But then I experienced some incredible other things, you know, so yeah. I certainly wouldn't change it for anything.
Yeah, I would guess your friends would be more jealous of you than the other way around.
I think you're probably right. Yeah. And a lot of them, you know, I did get to see some of them along the way, you know, like they would turn up at Wembley Arena or something like that. Or, you know, I remember was one friend who happened to be in New York while I was there promoting a record. And I was like, oh my God, you're actually here. You know, it was like one of those moments. It was like, you know, a little drip feed of home came to me, you know, so that they did get to see some of that madness.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the songs that you have written. Where do you get your inspiration from generally?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I mean, gosh, it depends everywhere, really. You know, everything from obviously from my friends and family and loved ones and relationships. Obviously, that's probably the main influence on my songwriting. I think I love emotional connection lyrics, but everything from kind of, you know, travel. Like I wrote a song about John Lennon about the first time I ever went to New York, talking about New York. And, you know, as a young singer-songwriter, I had to go and visit all the places that John Lennon was famous for being photographed at. And of course, you know, the Dakota buildings where he eventually died and the Imagine Circle and all that. And that lyric came out of that that trip. It's called John Lennon Lived Here, which is on my Real Life Love album. But, you know, kids nowadays, I write about my kids. There's a song on that same album called Aeroplane, which was about, you know, paper airplanes. And my kids used to, you know, love playing. Any parents would relate to that song. But, you know, anything, like even just reading a book. You know, I remember writing a song about Far From the Madding Crowd once called Miss Everdeen, you know, which is one of the characters in the book. So it can lyrically can come from anywhere, really.
Yeah, definitely. So as well as performing live songs in a musical kind of way, you're also performing in musicals. So how did that actually come about?
The first musical I ever did was called McGregor's Trap, and it was based on Robert Louis Stevenson's Kidnapped, and it was at the Edinburgh Fringe, and I couldn't have been more than 22, something like that. Wow. 22, 23. And it was great. It was a brand new musical written by a guy called Brian Spence. It never went anywhere, unfortunately, but a really great musical and a great experience and a great kind of foray into musical theatre for me, because it wasn't like, you know, going straight into the West End. I did get offered Joseph back then, early days, just after Jason. But I didn't take it at the time. But, you know, since then I have done Joseph a couple of times. I've done Godspell. I did a musical about based on the songs of Barry Manilow, which was an interesting, interesting journey for me. And now I've actually written a musical.
Yeah, the one, isn't it?
The one, exactly. It was started off loosely based on kind of my early life, but then as these things go, these kind of big projects, it kind of transformed into a much bigger thing, and now it's about two brothers in Leicester, set in a pub in Leicester.
And when are we expecting that to be starting shows?
Well, funnily enough, we were just getting into that as the pandemic hit, so obviously that kind of put the brakes on the whole project. So nowadays it's kind of hard to get a new musical into theatres for obvious reasons. Yeah. You know, there's been a big 2-year sabbatical, and everything that was going into the theatres in 2020 is now finding a home again.
Yeah.
And so we're years off of putting new musicals in. Producers are very scared to put money into new musicals. They're looking for surefire bets, you know, your Les Mises and, you know, Let's Rock You. We will rock cues of the world are the ones that are actually going out there, you know. So what we decided to do, me and the team that I work with, is record the album, or record an album of the songs. So that's what we did, and so far we've only put it out on YouTube. So if anyone's interested, go to chesneyhawks.com. It's all on there. Look for The One, the musical, and we made little videos. We got an amazing cast that we assembled around the world, actually. And they all recorded it in their cupboards and bedrooms. So we did it all locally, and I've got some fabulous singers. You know, Kevin Sim from Liberty X did he played young Duncan, whilst I am old Duncan.
Are we looking at this to be in the West End ideally, or Broadway, or where?
I think I'd like to put it on tour to start with, to be honest. It feels like a real touring thing, but yeah, obviously the goal, the holy grail for a musical is to be in the West End or Broadway. So, of course, I have dreams of that. So we'll see how the project goes. We shall see. Watch this space, Toby.
Yeah. Now, you've got a big compilation album coming out later this month on the 25th Indeed. Of March. What can you tell us about the album?
That was another lockdown project where I delved into, you know, my back catalogue since the Buddy Song era, right through to my last album. film, which was Real Life Love in 2012. And it was really fun and quite cathartic to go back across all the old demos and come into the outtakes and things like that. So we found like demos of the One and Only, and we also got Nick, who's a very good friend of mine now, Kershaw, to do a 2022 remix of the song, because he produced it, the original. So that was pretty cool, actually, and he did a fantastic job. I mean, he didn't just remix it; he re-recorded he did a new guitar solo and like recorded all the guitars again. And he went way, way more than I thought he was going to do. And it's really interesting to kind of hear the take. I don't know why he redid it, because I guess the solo is quite an iconic solo now. Yeah. And so when the mix came, I was like, oh, wow, he's redone the solo. Interesting, you know.
Do you prefer the new version?
I mean, I actually really like the new version, but maybe it's because I've had 30 years to listen to the old version. And this feels spangly. You know, it's like getting into a brand new Rolls Royce or something.
Yeah. And also, you're going to be playing Rewind Festival this year, North and South.
Yes. I mean, I've played Rewind over the years many, many times. I'm doing it again this year. I've got all sorts of gigs this year. I've got Rewind, I've got the Let's Rock shows. Anyone interested in coming to see me live, chesneyhawks.com, it's all on there. Yeah. I seem to have tons and tons of gigs coming in, which is great. Yeah. More so than the last couple of years, Toby.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. And how have you been coping during these last couple of years? Have you been doing online shows and things like that?
Yeah, I did do quite a few online shows. I actually created my own TV studio from my studio in LA in the end. I went all out and I started this show called Live and Unfiltered, where I would play live music and chat, and I brought in guests to talk to, including a lot of health workers through the pandemic, who come and tell their story. And I mean, we had tears and laughter, and also it was great fun. That's all on my YouTube channel now. I think we did a whole series of I think we did 10 shows. Wow. And it was hard work and fun, and the learning curve was quite steep. But that was kind of my main thing through lockdown, and it was really fun. I also started a podcast through lockdown, which was another interesting, talking about mental health was our main kind of drive. So if anyone's interested in that, we are all a bit mental.com.
Yeah, well, that's one of the few benefits of the pandemic, isn't it, really? People that had never even thought about doing a TV show or a podcast have just made one. It's that saying, isn't it? Necessity is the whatever of invention.
Wisdom of invention, or mother of invention.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's true. I think what happened was my wife and I were sitting down thinking, okay, so my main income, our main income is my gigs. And it looks like we're not going to have any gigs this year. So how are we going to do this? You know, and I think there were so many people up and down, well, all over the world, to be honest with you, doing the same thing, you know, where some people could work through the pandemic and work from home. And that was great. And I was always so happy to hear my friends were doing well through the pandemic. But there's people, you know, such as myself, that couldn't work at all. And so we had to think about diversifying somehow. And, I certainly didn't kind of, you know, it was tough financially, but creatively it was really great. And, I made loads of videos and did a lot of live shows, and we started the podcast and all of these things, funnily enough, have kind of stayed a part of my life, if you know what I mean. I got the musical recorded. So, you know, the pandemic, I have a lot to thank for, because I think, you know, maybe a lot of those things probably wouldn't have been, even created. Yeah. I also finished an album. I've got a new album that's coming out in the summer. So, without the pandemic, I'm not sure that would have been finished either.
Definitely. So is there anything else coming up for you? Because it sounds like it's going to be quite a busy year. Is there stuff on top of that?
Yeah, there is. My father was in a band called the Tremolos, a 60s band, very successful band in the 60s and 70s. And he had a tour late last year where he was supposed to be doing all up and down the country, doing this kind of package tour with the Marmalade and PJ Proby and Herman's Hermits and all these, these old guys up and down the country playing their wares. And so Dad got ill, and I took over the tour. And that was an amazing experience as well, like, you know, fronting the tremolos, these music I grew up with. And there's another tour this year, and I think my dad is probably not going to be able to make it. So I'm going to be taking over the reins again of the tremolos. So so I've got, let's see, I've got the musical, I've got the podcast, I've got the box set, I've got my gigs, I've got tremolos gigs, I've got a new album. That's enough, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, where are we able to keep up to date with you everywhere?
Well, Galactic Central Point for me is ChesneyHawks.com. Yeah. I try to keep everything updated there. I've got all my gigs, all my releases and latest news and There are sections in the website for the musical, for the podcast and everything. So if anyone's interested, ChesneyHawks.com.
Great. Well, many thanks for coming on the show today. It's been great to have you on.
Oh, thanks for having me. And I've enjoyed sharing the spotlight with Fozzie Bear. For those of you that don't know what I'm talking about because you're only listening to the audio, Toby is sitting in front of a fantastic Muppets picture. You've got all the grapes right behind him. So that kept me going.
Put you in a mood subconsciously, I think.
It did. Yeah. Who doesn't love Fozzie Bear?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey! Yeah,
yeah. Hey! The throbbing pulse of sound. The Toby Gribben Show.